Here's the voice you've been waiting for, listeners. Here's the voice you've been waiting for, and Peter's been waiting for it too.
Yeah, well, good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And, here I am with a lot of enthusiasm, ho, 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 and a brand new knee.
some more metal in her body. As if she needed any more. But
right.
I'm so glad she's back. I'm sure you are too. But let us know. I held the fort pretty well, I think. But
I think you did a fabulous job.
Maybe you won't think so. Anyway, what do we have today?
Please give Peter a pat on the back.
A pat on the head or something.
Yeah.
We're mostly liquid today. Mostly, but not entirely.
Well, this guy's wonderful. You talk about experts on booze. This guy's it. Richard Carlton Hacker. With a name like that, he could be anything in the world, I guess, including a prince. His actual email address is a sir, not a prince, but a Sir Richard. So I can't go the whole thing. I can't tell you the
Richard,
whole thing.
Sir Richard won. I asked him what happened to Richard.
I don't think you're not allowed to say that.
I didn't give the rest of it.
Okay.
So besides, he's proud of it, I'm sure, and he's proud of his British heritage and proud of the fact that he wrote the book that he wanted to exist, but which didn't exist. And it's called The Connoisseur's Guide to... Go ahead.
Worldwide Spirits. And it's everything you ever wanted to know.
Okay, welcome to On the Menu Radio to Sir Richard the First. otherwise known as Lionheart, right?
That's correct, exactly right.
Now, this is a self-designated title because it is only part of the email address for the guest we're talking to right now, whose name is Richard Carlton Hacker. But Richard Carlton Hacker has an enormously fine qualification, which brings him to today's program, which is that he's an expert on spirits of the liquor variety all around the world. Was this something you set out to do, or was it sort of like an accident?
Well, it wasn't an accident, but I did set out by drinking. And that started it because I've been a writer all my life. Literally, I've been published since I was 17 years old, and I'm substantially older than that now. And you start drinking things, and as a writer, you're curious, and you start to ask questions, and you want to find out more. And one thing led to another, and then I began meeting people in the industry, distillers and mixologists. They were bartenders back then. Now they're mixologists.
Yeah, mixologists.
Yeah, things have changed. And I began traveling a lot and going to these different countries and visiting the distilleries and seeing how spirits were made. And I started writing about it because this is interesting. I said somebody else should know about these things. So I began writing articles for various magazines. And soon I had a lot of articles and a lot of knowledge, and I've always wanted a book that would encompass all the spirits, and I couldn't find one. I mean, there are excellent books written about bourbons and Scotch whiskies and Japanese whiskies, but there is no single book that I could find that had all the spirits. And so I decided, after 3 decades of doing this, I'm going to write the book I've always wanted.
Wasn't Michael Jackson, didn't he do whiskey?
He did whiskey, yeah. There was another guy whose name I've forgotten now who did just whiskey. Did a fine job. I think David was his first name.
Michael Jackson, of course, he's passed on now.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
In my mind, the king, because he specialized, of course, in Scotch whiskey, in single malt Scotch.
Yeah. First he did beer, actually.
He actually started out with beer.
He did, yeah. Of course, I don't drink beer, so I never, got to that part of his writing. I don't do anything under 11%.
Sir Richard, here's an interesting factoid for you. Michael Jackson and Peter Haig are exactly the same age. We were born in the same town, and we didn't meet till we were both in our late 60s.
Wow.
That's
interesting.
I still don't, to this day, I still don't know how I recognized him in a room full of people. And I said, "Are you Michael Jackson?" And he said, "Yes, I am." In fact, I think I might have said, "Are you the other Michael Jackson?" But you have some extraordinary qualifications. But the one about the Scotch whiskey people is probably the most important. Tell us again, as you did before we came on the air, how you pronounce it and what it means.
Oh yes, I'm a member of the Keeper of the Quay, Q-U-A-I-C-H, and it's an honorary society devoted to Scotch whiskey, both single malts and blends. And it gets its name because the quay is an ancient Gaelic pewter bowl that you hold in your hand. It has handles on either side, and it's meant for filling with Scotch whiskey, of course, and handing it to your friend or your guest, and he takes it and takes a drink. Now, if he drinks too much, it means he's greedy. If he drinks too little, it means he's stingy. So he has to know to drink just the right amount. So this symbol of proper drinking, Scotch whiskey, if you will, was adopted by the majority of all the heavy hitters in the Scotch whiskey industry, and an organization was formed called the Keepers of the Quay. And you can't join, you've got to be invited. And it's a very prestigious organization. Wikipedia calls it a secret organization. Nothing secret about it. We meet twice a year at Blair Castle in Scotland, and it
has
new members. And when you're a keeper, it just you get a medal, and you know it's just a very prestigious thing. I'm fortunate enough to, after having been a keeper for 10 years, I was made a master of the quay, which is really quite an honor. And there's only 5 of us living in America and less than 300 worldwide.
I had this feeling that, you remember the author Daniel Brown, who wrote the book about
The Mona Lisa.
And what was it called now? The Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code.
I have a feeling this quay is a little bit like the Da Vinci Code, and Daniel Brown might write a book about it if you're not careful.
Very possible. It's kind of like the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, you'll really need to be careful. You have to keep the faith and go back to the Crusaders, and then everything will be fine. So you wrote the book that didn't exist.
Right, the book I've always wanted, and I just talked with somebody else who wanted a certain object to art, and he couldn't find it. There's one in the world that was $1 million, so he just made one. So it's kind of that way, except for an author, it's a little easier than doing that, but not that much easier. So yeah, I wrote the book I've always wanted, and hopefully other people won't have my frustration, because you can pick up The Connoisseur's Guide to Worldwide Spirit, and as you know, I've got a chapter of every spirit in the world in there.
So is that really totally inclusive? Is it totally inclusive? Because every time I turn around, there's a new a liqueur or being made, or there's a new native alcohol or liquor thing being unearthed in South America. I mean, it seems to be ongoing always.
Well, yeah, you can't keep up with everything. In fact, not every brand is in there, because the minute the book came out, 16 new brands came out.
Oh, sure, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, it's impossible. But what I did was I did representative samples of everything out there, from liqueurs to, I've got Baijiu in there, the Chinese spirit that no one knows about.
But yeah, I didn't know about that one. Now,
it's the most consumed spirit in the world, but nobody knows about it outside of China.
Where do you get it?
You get it in China.
There's 3.4 billion people in China, and it's their national drink.
Wow.
So if everybody has a glass, well, that's the most consumed spirit.
Yeah.
Now, we got a bottle of something through the pipeline. I can't remember who sent it to us. And it actually has a number, not a name, and it's from Bolivia.
All right.
And it's a lot like Pisco, but it's not like Pisco.
Interesting. It's an offshoot of Pisco, then.
We never actually got to talk to the person who sent it to us. I really don't know why they didn't follow up, but they didn't. I kept the bottle because I thought someday somebody might call and say, did you enjoy that? And
well, it's very frustrating, and that happens to me occasionally. You get a bottle of something, and you say, you know, you can kind of guess what it is. And you look at the label, it's got to tell you where it's made. But, you know, why did they do this? Who sent it to me? How is it distilled?
Yeah.
Now, there's another one, and it's Portuguese, and it's called something like Orahu. And it's a little bit like grappa.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we bought a bottle home, and we came back from Portugal, and somehow or other it got dropped.
how surprising!
it was a terrible shame because it soaked what we were carrying in the bag.
A brown paper bag, I hope.
No, it was a cloth bag. Otherwise, the bottle would have fallen through.
Yeah. Well. You know, in the beginning of my book, I say, because people say, oh, it's a cocktail book. No, it's not a cocktail book. Yeah, there's plenty of cocktail books out there. This is a book about spirits. And I said, and it's not so much a book on how to drink, because we all know how to do that. You know, you put a glass to your lip and you tip your hand and things take over. But it's a book on just appreciating all the different spirits that are out there. You don't have to like them all, but I just would feel good if people would just know about everything they see on the back bar, or if they're traveling to some wild exotic country and someone brings out, shochu, yes, wow, I know what that is. You know, I don't particularly care for it. In fact, I say in the shochu chapter, I say, it's an acquired taste.
Right.
Yeah,
you have to be Korean, I think, to acquire it, because that's their major drink. But still, it's an important part of a society. And now bartenders are using that as ingredients in cocktails, which is where a lot of these weird spirits are ending up.
Yeah, now we already contacted our good friends, the Noninos. We emailed Antonella Nonino about all the space that you gave to Nonino Grappa in your Grappa section. Mm-hmm. So they're excited about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, she wants to write to you, so I'm going to give her your email address.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, just speaks English.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of grappa. In fact, in my book, I talk about an incident. When I go to Italy, remember years ago, I was at a bar in the morning, because that's where they served coffee also.
Right.
And this old grizzled guy walked up to the bar and ordered a shot of grappa. This is like 10 in the morning.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He knocked it back. And he walked out, and I'm looking and looking, and I said to the bartender, was that grappa? He said, yeah. I said, just give me a glass. I could try it. At that point, I'd never really had grappa. And so he brought me a glass. I took a sip, and I figured that wasn't an old grizzled guy. That was like a 20-year-old guy. He just looks that way because he's drinking grappa at 10 in the morning.
Well, the amazing thing that's happened most recently with grappa is the absolutely glorious-looking containers. I mean, the finest possible glassware that you can imagine. And it makes the grappa so much more expensive, but I guess if you have enough money to buy grappa, then I guess that's okay.
I guess they're trying to make it look good, because, you know, it's started by finding a way to use the leftover grape skins when they crush grapes.
That was the first grappa. I was in school in Florence, and that's all we could afford.
Yeah, what they told us, and these are the Naninas, I think, they said grappa was originally a drink of the very poor people who lived in the mountains in Friuli, and the houses were not heated. So the man of the house would get up in the morning, and before he went about his business, he needed a heart starter. he would have a slug of grappa, like your friend who came into the bar.
That will do it. I can pretty much say that would do it. Yeah, yeah.
That will get you going. Now,
it'll get you going, or it may stop you. I don't know.
Here's one that Anne would have wanted to tell you about, except she didn't remember it yet. So I'll do it. But we had lunch with the Noninos the last time we were in Friuli, and they served a. I don't.
It was a catered lunch.
Well, they didn't call it a grappa. It was a Nonino tonic.
Oh yeah.
as a cocktail, Well, I mean, I can mix a number of things with grappa. Tonic wouldn't be one of them.
No, it would not. I'm not sure what you would really mix with grappa to make it better. I'm thinking sherry herring or something, a lot of it.
we took that down because we were very well behaved. Not only to learn that the luncheon we were going to have, there was going to be a grappa matched with each course.
Oh, fantastic.
They did, except for one fish course, they got white wine.
Yeah.
But every single course was matched to grappa, and that's kind of the thrust of what they're trying to do now, not make it a special spirit, but put it in the same category as a fine wine.
Right, right. Now, they're doing that with cognac. They've done that for years.
Yes,
in Paris, you probably know they have cognac dinners where they pair different cognacs, you know, VS, VSOP, and XO with different courses. And I just went to a port tasting luncheon where it was nothing but 1945 ports. And they had a different one for each course.
Wow.
might have go with dessert. I'm not sure about anything else.
I know. It was, taken there by car and taken home there by car.
Well, we had lunch with the, not sherry, what's the other thing from Spain? It's like sherry. It was same, similar region.
It was PX.
Yeah.
What they call PX?
What is that?
Pedro Jimenez.
Made from a grape called Pedro Jimenez.
Oh, yeah, PX, exactly.
Well, yeah. we visited the brewery or whatever distillery.
It was a wine.
Whatever it was, we had lunch only matched with the Pedro Jimenez, which to me was like having a sherry tasting. There's
right.
Some dry, some not so dry.
They told us that the grape, the PX grape, in fact, was the grape that was used to be made into sherry. But after phylloxera, after they were replanting, after
mm-hmm.
phylloxera, they decided to go with the grape they now use, largely because it was less expensive.
Yeah, and they could find it, too.
So the people from this region called Maria Montano or something like that was the last refuge of the PX grape, which was brought from Germany to southern Spain by
Peter
something or other was the guy's name. He got corrupted to Pedro Jimenez, but
right.
he was German.
Yeah, but he was a mercenary soldier who was brought to southern Spain to fight the Moors when the Spanish were finally trying to get them out of Spain.
Right.
The
alcohol and spirits, you know, have shaped pretty much our whole, you know, international society through the years.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had the Whiskey Rebellion here in Western Pennsylvania, of course.
That's right, yeah. With the Whiskey Rebellion, I know the gin came to England, you know, called Dutch Courage. You know,
exactly.
William of Orange brought that over. So it's really interesting how spirits and the love of spirits have really developed our societies.
It was, of course, the core of the British Navy. I mean, the only reason that Nelson's sailors were able to
perform
they did was because they were all blind drunk.
I know.
But I wanted to just mention one thing before you sign off, because at sign off I may forget to say, listeners, if you want the book that Sir Richard thought needed to be written, so he wrote it. It's a fascinating storybook of everything there is to do with spirits. What I was most surprised about was the amount of coverage that you gave to vermouth.
Which
I always thought was classed as a fortified wine rather than a liquor.
Right, exactly. And I did that because, Peter, I figured somebody has to do it.
There you go.
You know, when I traveled to Italy quite a bit, I'm always amazed at what they drink there is they have vermouth with a cube. And that's it's very low alcohol by comparison to, you know, the brown spirits. And after a while, you start to really like it. And when I came back home, each time I go through a week period of a week spelled W-E-E-K of drinking vermouth at night from my cocktail, and I actually am quite fascinated by it.
Yeah, but we interviewed somebody who wrote a whole book about it. Do you know who that was?
I don't remember.
It wasn't Fred.
I remember we interviewed the guy in New York, and he's in your book. There's a guy in New York who makes very good sweet vermouth.
Right, exactly, yes.
And he promised to send me a bottle and a rotter. He never did.
Yeah. You can make vermouth in any place by law. You know, it's not like, you know, tequila or cognac, you know, where they're geographically sequestered, you know, but you can make vermouth anywhere in the world.
Yeah, well, we just, you know, we get a lot of press releases, and this one that we just got the other day has a headline that says, "Oh, no, there's a worldwide shortage of tequila."
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, that's kind of true. It goes up and down. Because the agave plants, you know, once you use them, they're gone.
Yeah.
And so, and it takes 8 to 10 years for an agave plant to mature enough to be harvested and chopped up and roasted and squeezed. So, yeah, I remember back in the 90s, there was an agave shortage, and the price for agave shot way up, and the price for tequila shot up. And then there was too much tequila because guys started overplanting. And so it goes in cycles. So, yeah, now we're in a shortage again.
Yeah, well, did you get into, we just got as a sample, an absolutely astounding bottle of rum.
This is rum aged in vermouth barrels.
Yeah.
Coming from Puerto Rico.
Right. There's some great. My chapter on rum was actually a lot of fun to write because, you know, you can't write about something without tasting it.
You like it.
Oh,
huh?
Sure. Yeah, you can.
So I rather enjoyed that one.
I'll tell you something that I've never told Anne before, and I don't think she'll be necessarily horrified. I was hitchhiking from Cambridge, where I was at university at the time, to my hometown of Huddersfield, because it was my sister was getting married.
Oh.
It was just before Christmas. And I knew it was going to be cold and horrible, so I equipped myself with a flagon of Navy rum. And by the time I got to Yorkshire, it was almost empty.
But you weren't cold.
But I wasn't cold.
Oh.
So anyway, this is the definitive book. You need to have a copy on your shelf, and you need to read it because there's so much good humor.
Yes, I was going to say.
Thank you.
And so much interesting history in a liquid which has, in its own little way, changed the world, as you said earlier on.
Yeah, well, we could talk for forever, Richard, because you have so much great information and such a good sense of humor, as Peter said. I wish you well with this book. It's unique, and it's sort of you absolutely have to have it as a reference book.
And here's
thank you very much. That makes me feel good. That makes it all worthwhile.
And here's something you have to try. The story the story goes, and I was trying to find it on the internet before we came on the air. There was a gentleman who dedicated his life to drinking beer in every inn in England. I think he might have included Scotland as well. And he was on his second go-around.
Good heavens.
When he passed away. I have a feeling you could set yourself a goal somewhat similar to that with spirits.
One of the goals I do have, I'm halfway there, I want to visit every distillery in Scotland. At this point, there's 360-some. I've gone to over 150. So I have a ways to go, but I'm trying.
Well, you must call us when you get to number 300. And, we'll
talk about garbled, are you?
Right. I'll call you from the distillery.
And we'll share it with the world. And in the meantime, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Bye, Richard. Sir Richard. Bye-bye.
And don't go away, because we'll be right back.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. We're going to continue along the lines of our liquid gratifications here. Coming up, Powell and Mahoney craft cocktail mixers. They're really good, aren't they?
Oh, they sure are. Yeah, yeah. There's actually two different kinds, but that we'll let our spokesperson Meredith explain it all, because she does a much better job than we could do anyway. Because after all, she sells them for a living. She's the director of communications for two gentlemen who've founded a business because they thought that it was necessary and they wanted to do it.
Who's Mike?
Mike?
Oh, there's somebody else.
Is Anne's asking me who Mike is, and I don't know the answer. The person I talked to was definitely female.
And, Meredith.
And,
okay.
And her name was Meredith. And the gentleman who founded the company are called Powell and Mahoney. And for reasons I do not understand, they're in Salem, Massachusetts. Nothing to do with witches, I don't think. But an interesting product set, a company that's sure to grow and that you'll certainly want to know about, especially if you were captivated by Sir Richard I. After in the previous section, because these are things to mix with what he was telling you all about. So here's Meredith. Meredith, welcome. Meredith, welcome to On the Menu Radio. We're delighted to have you join us today. And Miss Anne's missing out of the opportunity to talk to you, but that's okay. She'll hear you later, I feel sure. And Meredith, pronounce your last name for me, because I'm sure I'll totally butcher it.
Oh, that's okay. It's Orphanos.
Orphanos is Greek?
It is.
But ginger ale is not, I mean, ginger beer is not Greek.
But Greeks do enjoy it, I'm sure.
Oh, they do? Okay. We're talking to Meredith as the Director of Marketing and Communications with Powell and Mahoney in Salem, Massachusetts. And Mr. Powell and Mr. Mahoney made a discovery.
They did. I'd love to tell you a little bit about both founders.
Please do.
Sure. Like you mentioned, Mark Mahoney and Brian Powell, they came together and decided to launch Powell Mahoney Cocktail Mixers. That happened in 2010. And Brian Powell actually has a history with stirring cocktail mixers. So they're one of our competitors, and he realized he wanted to go off and recreate, you know, what Stirrings was doing, but wanted to do it under his own name. And Mark Mahoney, he is has been in the beverage industry for quite a long time. He launched Maui Beverages, which is a smoothie-based company. He no longer owns and operates that, but it was kind of similar to cocktail mixers, things like pina coladas and strawberry daiquiris. For restaurants and, you know, vacation spots. So both of the folks that, you know, launched Powell Mahoney are really beverage experts. And I think it really, you know, speaks to the quality of the brand. So it's a fun story. And they still are both very much active. So.
Now, it's a fairly crowded category in a way, isn't it? I mean, after all, people have been drinking Cuba Libres with Coca-Cola and rum for a very long time, and there are a variety of other concoctions. I know Anne has a cousin who drinks Canadian whiskey with something, I forget now, I think it's 7-Up, I think she has 7 and 7 or something like that. Now, what was it that made Mark and Brian think there was a space for them?
Sure. It is a crowded space in terms of I guess you would say craft cocktails and natural cocktail mixers. But that really didn't happen until, I don't know, 2011, 2012. We started to see more brands like ours pop up. So we really were one of the first craft cocktail mixers to launch. And what makes us unique is that we're using natural ingredients. And that really differentiates us from a lot of the mixers that you might find, especially when we launched in 2010. So the quality of the products and in the process in which they're made, which are small kettles, that really speaks to the quality of the product, which while there are plenty of cocktail mixers to choose from, I would have to argue that there aren't many that have that type of quality and attention to ingredients. So that really makes us stand out. We've won over, it's hard to keep track of all of them, but I would say over 25 tasting awards at this point for all of the different SKUs or flavors that we carry. So we're being recognized, absolutely, for the quality and the natural ingredients that we're using.
So basically, I guess you would say the result of this is it tastes really good.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I would
agree with you. I love them. I have a corner of my refrigerator that's dedicated to Powell and Mahoney. I drink them a little bit like soda sometimes. I don't always make them into a cocktail, but they're fun however you do it. Now,
oh, absolutely. And that brings up a really great point. With cocktail mixers like ours, you can make things, mocktails, where you don't have to necessarily add alcohol. You can just add a little seltzer water to them. Flavors like our lemon sour or our peach Bellini are really delicious just on their own with a splash of seltzer, so they can certainly be enjoyed that way.
But they have bubbles in them already, right? So you're suggesting you should make a few more?
Well, not all of our products are carbonated.
Oh, okay, there we go. So I guess I didn't drink all of them, so...
Yeah, well, that's right, because I did send to you to try our new cans, which are just about a year old, and those are definitely carbonated. Those are flavors like ginger beer, tonic. We have a sparkling mojito. We have a really fun blood orange ginger beer, which is really unique. So those have the bubbles already, but flavors like our margarita and Bloody Mary and peach Bellini, those are non-carbonated mixers. Those are sold in glass bottles.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we didn't see any of those, and I was a tad confused. Now,
I'll have to send you some samples of those as well.
Oh, you must certainly do that. But I have a question, and it's always puzzled me just a little bit. What's the difference between ginger ale and ginger beer?
Sure. Yeah, that's a funny question. We get that a lot. Ginger ale, something like, you would buy Canada Dry. Everybody knows ginger ale, made with ginger and carbonated water and sugar. Ginger beer is kind of similar in the sense today, but it gets its name historically from the process in which the ginger beer was brewed, similar to craft beer or just simply beer. It's a process of, brewing that it got that name, even though ginger beer historically has never contained alcohol. So today, there's, it's a more simple process where we're mimicking, I guess you could say, the way in which ginger ale is made. But the name just has stuck. It's a name that people, I think, associate for really strong ginger beer or strong ginger taste, I should say. It's less sugary, the less sweet than maybe what you would find in a ginger ale. But the process in which they're made today are pretty similar. It's just a historical name that has stuck.
Okay, I see. So it's really interesting. That was one of my favorites. It's really gingery. There's no question about that.
Now, yeah.
Now, here's a product to try. Here's a product suggestion for you. When I was in college, how many years ago, we used to play intramural sports, And the good thing about intramural sports is it didn't matter who won as long as everybody had a good time. And it was possible to break the game up by having a drink at halftime called a shandy. A shandy traditionally is beer and a 7-Up type concoction called lemonade, which is common in England. And the other alternative is a ginger beer shandy with beer and an equal quantity of ginger beer. And very, very thirst-quenching, just exactly the right thing to have at halftime and encourage you to have another one when the game is over.
That sounds delicious.
So maybe you should introduce a product called a shandy, spelled S-H-A-N-D-Y.
Yeah, we have played around with our mixers in the past and done things with our blood orange, the blood orange mixer. That's non-carbonated and added light beer to it, and we've got a couple of shandy recipes on our website.
Oh, you do?
But
okay.
I think that would be smart to look into different. I think keeping it simple for folks where they look and see a product is made for a specific cocktail, I think people appreciate that. So while you can make countless different types of recipes with our mixers, things like margarita that folks understand what to do with it, so
exactly,
that's not a bad idea.
No, well, you understand what to do. I never tried this. I'm gonna make myself a Powell and Mahoney shandy.
Absolutely.
While I'm cooking dinner tonight, and there's a particularly good reason why, because I make the chicken recipe is called beer can chicken, and it doesn't take a whole can of beer, so there'll be some left over.
There you go. And if you're not sure how to make it, you can go to our website, and we have all different types of recipes.
I can assure you I've drunk more shandies than you have in your lifetime.
Now, you probably are right there.
now let's talk a little bit about future, because I don't know how much you can really disclose. You might want to keep your new recipes a secret somewhat. But you are increasing your product line, and the ones you sent us were some of the newest ones. But do you have any that you can reveal?
You know, I will say that we are so impressed and so proud of our ginger beer, and we launched the blood orange ginger beer. I wouldn't be surprised if you see us expand and offer different flavored ginger beers. I think there's a market for it. I think we do ginger beer really well, and I can see my company moving into expanding onto different ginger beer offerings. I think we're going to be really innovative in that segment, and I'm excited for what that will bring, and I'm excited for all the research and development and all the fun tastings we'll have in the office. But
there you go.
If we were going to expand in any way, it would be more ginger beer offerings.
Great. Well, I think that's a great idea. Now, do you have a particular favorite mixer to go with the blood orange ginger beer?
A particular mixer, or
no, a particular liquor, say rum or gin,
sure,
or vodka, whatever it is.
Yeah, vodka is really great with the blood orange ginger beer, as well as the original. It's the Moscow Mule. Everybody's so excited about creating Moscow Mules at home, and even when they're dining out with the copper mugs, they're really fun. But dark rum works pretty well too.
Sure, sure.
Great things like dark and stormies. But I think you could even throw rum in there, and I think it would be absolutely delicious. But I would say my personal favorite and recommendation would be the Moscow Mule, the vodka.
Great. Now, tell our listeners around the country, because this is not yet taking over the export market, although I'm sure at some point it will. But how can people find the product? I know you did a deal with Target. Where else are people going to be able to find it?
Sure. Yeah, we're really fortunate in that we do have distribution throughout the United States. We're not outside of the U.S. at this point, but like you mentioned, Target is a really strong partner of ours and carries many of our products. We also have distribution through Walmart, and that's nationally throughout the U.S. We also work with Whole Foods Market. They were one of the first accounts to bring us in and distribute us nationally, so we love Whole Foods. They carry almost all of our products, and the partnership has just been wonderful. I think that by partnering with Whole Foods Market, you know, from the beginning, they believed in our brand, and they also allowed us to have speaking points about the quality of our ingredients because of the reputation with Whole Foods. You know, they're not bringing in just any product. So they're also a really strong partner. I always try and encourage folks to purchase our products there. Hopefully in the near future we'll be available on Amazon. We haven't conquered that one just yet. Or you can purchase our products directly from us online. So
great,
we
okay.
do ship.
Okay, so people can, if they can't find it locally, you can, you'll actually ship it from Salem to them.
We will. We ship out to the West Coast. We ship out to Texas, to Florida. We're really excited about the opportunity that we have there, shipping directly to our customers that just can't find the specific flavors that they're looking for, and by visiting powellandmahoney.com. That's a really easy process. You can buy it right from us, and we'll ship it to you.
Great. Well, don't forget to send me some of those mixers, and thank you so much for joining an analyst on the menu broadcast program. I hope that she'll be back with us again very soon. And
I really enjoyed having this conversation with you, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about Powell Mahoney and educate all of your dedicated fans. I look forward to introducing, you know, our products to new folks, and hopefully they'll have no problem finding us. Like I said, Target, Walmart, you know, we're all over, so we're excited, and
yeah,
I do appreciate your time.
That's absolutely terrific, and the last word is your email address. Tell our listeners what it is.
Sure. You can email us at info@powellandmahoney.com.
Now, what about Thirsty One? That was one I was referring to.
Oh, my direct email, if you have other questions, sure. I can be reached at my first name, Meredith, at thirstyone.com.
I just thought it was really cute that you called it Thirsty One.
Yeah. Apparently, Thirsty was taken, so Thirsty One is where we settled.
There you go. Okay, well,
yeah.
It's really funny. On the menu, radio was taken too.
Well, it's a big internet out there, so it doesn't surprise me.
It sure is. Meredith, thank you so much for joining me today, and we wish you continued success, which I'm sure is assured.
Oh, we appreciate that, and I wish you lots of success as well. You take care.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, we were now approaching again our friend Vicki Jakubovic, who's become a ubiquitous presence in our program.
Is she? Okay.
She's a publicist for just about everybody imaginable. But what we've been trying to do is also get you in line for Passover, and we did the kosher wines for you, and now we have a whole bunch of Keiko products. The point being that however you used to imagine Passover, the menu, you're not limited by anything. I mean,
yeah, the menu was really boring, same old, and
Well, some people call it tradition, but I understand.
Some people call it same old,
yes,
just like
exactly.
I just did.
So, but you can get anything. I mean, this batch of stuff had seaweed sheets that were kosher.
The other thing that's interesting is it turns out that kosher dishes are gluten-free.
They're free
a whole lot of other things as well. So not only do you have some great menu ideas for the holidays, but you have menu ideas and snack ideas year-round and helping you to deal with a greater variety of products that don't have things that you don't appreciate, body doesn't appreciate. So here's Vicky. Good morning, Vicky. Jakubovic.
Very phonetic. Jakubovic.
Yeah, couldn't be Eastern European or anywhere like that, I'm guessing, huh?
Czech.
Okay, Czech. Okay, Slovak or Czech?
Okay, Czech.
No, which one, Czech or Slovak?
Oh, well, Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, there you go. Well, they're separate now, right?
Oh, I don't know. I can't keep track of this stuff.
it's my
husband's family, not me.
Yeah, there you go. It's very confusing. Anyway, Vicky is a spokesperson for Keiko, and Keiko is a surprising company. Tell me how you described them to me just a couple of minutes ago.
Keiko is one of the largest importers, distributors, and manufacturers of kosher food. They make many, many different well-known kosher brands, gluten-free brands, and many other specialty foods.
And this is the season, I guess. This is high season for these products, right?
It's high season because Passover is coming. That's correct.
And let's see. Let's look at the range because it confused me. When I opened the box, it was like opening a box at Christmas time from someone who gives you great gifts. And you find
great.
A brand called Geffen and another one called Yehuda.
Right.
And another one called Hadar.
Correct.
And then Castle Seafood Snacks. I love the coconut chews.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people love those. Yes, these are all brand new for Passover, and these are the different brands that come out under the Keiko name, and they're very well known in the kosher food world.
So these are new for this year. Now, that's in itself is a little bit unusual because it seems to me that one of the things about Passover you could certainly say is that it's very traditional.
Right, and these are very unexpected and non-traditional products because you don't think about eating lasagna or gnocchi on Passover. And so these are all made gluten-free, so now we can eat them on Passover, which, you know, Passover grains are restricted for these.
Oh, right. I hadn't thought about that. So
right.
they're formulated especially.
Right, they're gluten-free, and they're great for people who have gluten-free diets all year long.
Yeah, but the marvelous thing about it is that they allow people not to be quite so restricted.
Exactly.
In some of the things that they put on their Passover table.
Right. And to create some unexpected recipes that your guests and friends won't really think they're going to get on Passover.
No, white asparagus, I mean, that looks absolutely delicious.
Yes. They're brined in a jar,
right.
And they're ready to eat straight from the jar. There's a lot of new, ready-to-use, convenient products for Passover, which a few years ago weren't available. It makes it a lot easier for moms and cooks.
What about asparagus would have made it non-kosher?
It's not that it's not kosher.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Just this is ready-to-serve and convenient. And on Passover, those types of products are more hard to find than during the rest of the year.
I got it.
Because
they require a lot more work, right?
Or a lot more certification. So the fact that there's many other, these and other products are available, ready to eat, out of the box, out of the jar, it's unusual for Passover.
Got it.
There used to be about, you know, very few items kosher for Passover. Now there's hundreds and hundreds and thousands, actually.
No, I loved the crunchy crackers. Were they the matzahs or were they the watzahs?
Oh, the watzah crackers?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are supposed to be similar to the wasa crackers that you find in your grocery store.
Oh, okay.
So they're a take on those, and they're crunchy, and you can serve them the way you do regular crackers year-round. But they're a little bit different than a matzah. So they're, you know, unexpected. They look nice. They serve up nice. They're crunchy, and they're only 50 calories.
I found what to do with them in my larder. Thanks to Miss Anne, who makes a variety of different preserve things, and one of her favorites is pesto.
Right.
And they go wonderfully well with pesto.
Absolutely. You can top them with just about anything.
You can. But there's something about what's in pesto, I guess, because the olive oil and the basil and the Parmesan cheese and everything.
Delicious. You can eat all that on Passover.
Oh, I can. I would not be refraining from eating anything on Passover. since if I'm anything, I'm Christian.
Probably not, if you were to observe Passover, you would be able to eat it.
There you go. I always tell people my Passover story, and it leads me to a question, because my wife and I once, she had a good friend in New York City. She lived on the Upper West Side in New York City, and she invited us one year to Seder at her house.
Mm-hmm.
And my job was to buy wine for Passover.
Mm.
And I knew about cream white Concord, and I knew about Manischewitz, and I knew we didn't like any of those. But when I saw kosher sangria, I said, well, maybe I've got a hit here. And I tried it, and it was just dreadful.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
But here's the question. Keiko is not in the beverage business.
Keiko's is owned by the Royal Wine Company.
Oh,
which is the largest distributor, importer, exporter, and manufacturer of kosher wine. And they make some of the most high-end, award-winning kosher wines for Passover and year-round.
We just had them on the program.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, not too long ago.
Many of them are award-winning, and even though they're kosher. I'm hearing a beeping. I don't know if it's my phone or what,
I think we're okay. I mean,
okay.
I could fiddle with it, but we've got lots of good sound recorded, so I don't want to start over again.
Unfortunately,
our sampling of the kosher wines got held up because Miss Anne's teetotaler just now.
Okay, well, you'll get to taste them at some point, and I'm sure you'll see why they are the biggest in the industry.
We'll get back at it. There's no question about that.
Sure.
Now, the spice grinders.
Yes.
Tell us about the spice, because they deal with the fact that our pepper mills keep on getting jammed.
Well, these are really high-end, and normally for Passover, you find spices in the typical jars, and you really don't find high-end products like this, grinders for Passover. Mm-hmm. Whole peppercorn blend, minced garlic, sea salt. They're really so beautiful. You can bring them straight from the kitchen to the table and serve them at the table. They're really very, very gourmet. I have to say that this year, a lot of the products from Keiko are very high-end, very gourmet. It's just not what you expect for Passover.
Right. Well, I wolfed down the mini cookies.
Uh-huh. Yeah, those look delicious, right?
They didn't last too long. And Anne's,
uh-huh. Anne's
been doing the same with the seaweed snacks.
Right, so the seaweed snacks are Sea Castle. They're roasted in spicy and sea salt. And then Glix is the brand of the chocolate bite cookies. There's vanilla and chocolate. They're straight out of the package, easy, convenient. Years ago, if you kept a truly strict Passover kitchen, you'd have to bake and cook everything from scratch. And the whole idea now is that there's so many ready-to-serve, easy, convenient products that a woman doesn't have to slave over a stove the whole 8 days in order to enjoy Passover.
Now, how do you go about distribution? Keiko itself is a distributor, not a retailer, right? So where are people going to be able to find these products?
You can find them in the Passover section of major supermarkets across the country, from Stop and Shop and ShopRite to Safeway, Ralph's. In every major supermarket, and certainly around Passover time, they usually have a big kosher Passover section that's as wide and long as the supermarket itself. There are also specialty stores, Whole Foods has a section for kosher foods around Passover, and then there are kosher food stores around the country as well.
No kidding. I never knew.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a whole industry there, huh?
Absolutely.
Well, are there any brands you'd like to highlight that we didn't get to sample?
I think that we sent you a little bit of everything. I also want to mention there's frozen pie crust for Passover, which is another unusual product for the Passover holiday. There's coconut chews. There's delicious jams from a brand called Tuscanini. It's a new brand from Keiko, and almost everything is made in Italy. One of their new flavors is white fig for Passover. Also unusual, high-end, gourmet. That's offering this year. Things that you just don't find everywhere else. Things that you've never found before. That will really make it easier for chefs, moms, who's ever cooking, to make whip up something really delicious and gourmet without really spending so much time enslaving in the kitchen.
Slaving over a hot stove, right?
Right, exactly.
So people can probably best find out about the whole range of products by going to keiko.com?
They can go to keiko.com. They can also go to a website called kosher.com, www.kosher.com. There's all kinds of recipes. There's tablescape ideas. There's cooking demos with kosher chefs and cookbooks and really all kinds of recipes, not only for Passover, but year-round. You can input your criteria by the diet you keep, by the time you want to spend on the recipe, by the ingredient. There's all kinds of ways to figure out how you can find a recipe on kosher.com. There are thousands and thousands and thousands. They've had over 9 million hits, and it's growing every day in popularity. And it's not just for people who are kosher. It's great for people who are lactose intolerant, gluten-free, or just want a kosher recipe.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the menu, and keep up the great work.
Okay. I hope everybody has a happy, healthy, kosher Passover.
Right. Thank you so much, Vicki.
Okay. Take care.
Well, Miss Anne, I hope you're happy to be back in the saddle again.
Oh, yeah.
Back here at On the Menu Radio. We're delighted to have you back. It was an enormous amount of work without you. I realize now just exactly how important and how vital it is, every little thing you do.
Nice to be appreciated.
Oh, there you go,
anyhow,
listeners.
And we appreciate our audience. And
yeah, let's have a big cheer.
Everybody.
Over the Steam Radio Internet, let's have a big cheer for Anne while she says,
goodbye, bye-bye.